The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
Hello, and welcome to Audio Journal's Mindful Moments program. You'll hear articles from Spirit of Change magazine. I'm Jillian, and for the next half hour, we'll explore
the most dangerous gift you can give a sixth grader
and the truth about medicine you weren't meant to know. Let's begin with the most dangerous gift you can give your sixth grader. When I was 12, I had a bicycle, a Boy Scout knife, a library card, and what amounted to a couple of square miles of free range. My parents had no idea where I was most afternoons, and I had no real idea where they were either. We met up at dinner, told each other the day's news, and went back out. I built a tree house with friends I'd known since first grade. I dammed a creek with rocks and caught frogs. I walked into the woods with no destination and came back when I was hungry. I read books up in trees. Some afternoons, I was bored out of my mind, and that boredom was the soil in which I grew everything I'd later become. A 12-year-old today has a different life. The library card has been replaced by a piece of glass that knows them better than their grandmother does. That follows them to bed and wakes up before they do. And that has been engineered with the same techniques I learned decades ago in advertising and broadcasting to keep their eyes on it for as many hours as possible. The creek's fenced off or paved over. Free range for most American kids has shrunk to the distance between the bedroom door and the school bus, and even that distance is patrolled. Now we have a hard data on what that's costing them. A study published December 1st in the journal Pediatrics by a team of Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, working with researchers at UC Berkeley and Columbia, looked at over 10,000 American adolescents and found that owning a smartphone at age 12 is associated with higher rates of depression, obesity, and insufficient sleep. The younger the kid was when they got the phone, the worse the obesity and sleep problems got. And in maybe the most damning finding, kids who reached 12 without a phone but then got one between 12 and 13 had more mental health problems and worse sleep at 13 than the kids who stayed phoneless. That's not screen time in general. That's the smartphone specifically, the thing in their pocket, the thing in the dark beside their pillow. I'm not surprised. I spent the early years of my career in advertising and broadcasting, writing copy, running radio stations, building ad campaigns for clients large and small. And I learned the way every working ad person learns how to manufacture wanting. You learn the hooks. You learn how to plant a hunger that the product is the only answer to. You learn that attention is a finite resource, and whoever captures it wins. None of that knowledge was secret. It was just the trade. What's different about the smartphone is that the techniques have been turned full force on children who've barely learned to read. Notifications are slot machine pulls. Likes are dopamine reinforcers. Streaks are addiction engineering. The endless scroll is a Skinner box you can hold in one hand. None of that is a metaphor. The people who designed these systems have been frank about it. Many of them won't let their own children near a phone, which is one of those small details that ought to be on the front page of every day until the country wakes up. What we're discovering, study by study and casualty by casualty, is that there are developmental tasks a 12-year-old body and mind absolutely
have to do. Move, sleep, wonder, get bored, fight with friends, make up with friends, walk in the woods, lie in the grass, and look at clouds. Have unsupervised conversations about things 12-year-olds talk about. And that, all of those tasks are being displaced, sometimes silently and sometimes not, by the device. My friend Joseph Chilton Pierce, in his beautiful book, Magical Child, laid out what each stage of childhood is actually for. Each stage opens a window. If the window is open and the child gets what they need, movement story, embodied experience, the felt sense of mattering to a real community, the window closes around a strong, integrated adult. If the window is open and the child gets a slot machine instead, the window still closes, just not around what was supposed to be in there. I've written for years about kids who now call ADHD the so-called hunters in a farmer's world. The kids who learn through doing and moving and building and arguing and questioning rather than through sitting still. Those kids are particularly catastrophic targets for the smartphone, because the phone hijacks the very systems, novelty-seeking, dopamine, immediate reward, that make a hunter mind brilliant in the right environment and miserable in the wrong one. Hand a hunter mind kid an infinite novelty machine that punishes them every time they put it down, and you've built a private hell for the very child whose gifts the world needs most. Rand Brazile is gentle about it, and I respect that. He notes that smartphones can do good things too. Keep families in touch. Help a curious mind learn anything they want. He's right. I'm not arguing for phoneless purity. I'm arguing for delay and for rebuilding the village around the child. The two go together. You can't take the phone away if there's nothing else there. A bored, unsupervised, friendless 12-year-old in a suburb where every other 12-year-old is on a phone has nowhere to go but onto the phone, too. That isn't a choice the kid is making. That's a vacuum the kid is filling. The good news is that parents have started organizing. The American Wait Until 8th movement has signed up well over 100,000 families pledging together not to give their kids a smartphone until at least the end of 8th grade, on the simple insight that the pledge only works if the kids' friends' parents take it too. Across the Atlantic, smartphone-free childhood launched in early 2024 from a single WhatsApp group in Suffolk, now has over 300,000 parents in its network with offshoots in more than 30 countries. School districts from Florida to California are banning phones from the school day, and the kids, after a couple of weeks of withdrawal, look up and notice each other again. Whole school cafeterias get loud again, the way cafeterias are supposed to be. General Surgeon Vivek Murthy made youth social media use an official public health priority back in 2023. The anxious generation is on parents' nightstand across the country. The conversation has shifted. The data is now in the chamber. What I want to say to every parent, grandparent, aunt, uncle, godparent, neighbor, and teacher reading this is simple. Delay the phone and rebuild the village. 12 is too young. 13 is too young. 14 is borderline. And while you're delaying, give them what 12-year-olds actually need. Trees, tools, bicycles, time, other kids who aren't on phones either.
a grandmother to bake with, a trail, a creek, a book read up in a tree, a dinner table where phones are face down in a basket by the door. The childhood you remember or wish you'd had wasn't an accident of nostalgia. It was a setting in which a particular kind of human being could grow up. We can build that setting again. It just takes a few of us to start. If there's a kid in your life heading for that 12-year-old threshold, share this piece with their parents. Send it to the grandparents. Send it to the teachers. Talk to two other families on your street and start your own little wait until 8 pack, even if you're the first ones to do it. The second article. In the modern era of medicine, where innovation is often equated with progress, many people assume that the dominant healthcare model in the United States reflects the best that science has to offer. Yet despite this, chronic illness continues to rise, and more Americans than ever rely on daily medication to maintain a semblance of health. What part of this equation remains unresolved, and what has the system failed to account for? The documentary, The Big Secret, answers this question by exploring the deeper forces shaping American healthcare and invites you to reconsider many of the assumptions you long accepted without question. Through interviews with physicians, researchers, and health advocates, it follows the trail of influence that has quietly determined how doctors are trained, how treatments are chosen, how the foundations of care were built, and how those foundations continue to shape health outcomes today. The making of a medical monopoly. For most of history, healing was guided by direct observation, traditional wisdom, and a blend of natural therapies drawn from plants, minerals, and food. That changed at the turn of the 20th century, when industrial and financial interest began reshaping medicine into a centralized pharmaceutical-first system. What emerged was a model built not around patient health, but around patentable products, standardized protocols, and institutional control. The push began with the Carnegie Foundation, which commissioned educator Abraham Flexner in 1908 to conduct a sweeping review of American medical schools. Though Flexner had no medical training, he visited every school in the country and produced a report that would become the blueprint for what would count as real medicine in the United States. The Flexner Report, published in 1910, called for stricter admissions, standardized training, and a closer alignment with laboratory science. While framed as a push for quality, the reform wiped out much of the therapeutic diversity that once defined American medicine. At the time, schools taught homeopathic, neuropathic, herbalism, nutritional therapy, and other empirical, non-drug-based approaches. The Flexner Report dismissed them not for poor outcomes, but for failing to fit the narrow research model promoted by industrial interests. Its adoption signaled the collapse of a pluralistic system and the rise of a pharmaceutical-centered medical order. The Rockefeller Foundation, already heavily invested in the growing pharmaceutical industry, saw the report as a perfect opportunity. Using their vast financial resources, the Rockefeller Foundation began offering grants to medical schools, but only those that adopted the Flexner model and rejected alternative approaches. They began to steer the entire medical education system toward a model that favored patented drug treatments over nutritional or holistic care. Schools that taught homeopathic, naturopathic, or nutrition were denied funding and accreditation, with the inability to compete financially, over half of them eventually closed. The American Medical Association, AMA, installed a gatekeeper. Through strategic lobbying and financial backing, the Rockefeller Foundation pushed for laws that granted regulatory authority to the AMA, a private membership organization that previously held no official power. This gave the AMA the ability to accredit medical schools and oversee licensure standards at the state level. With this new authority, it became the gatekeeper of what would be considered legitimate medicine in the United States, as explained in the documentary. Unfortunately, the AMA was also heavily influenced by the Rockefeller Foundation. Consequently, the AMA promoted allopathic medicine to the point that it became the only approved form of medicine taught in the United States. Consequently, doctors began prescribing the Rockefeller Foundation's patented medicines to manage, not cure, illnesses and diseases. Today, if a doctor recommends a natural or unconventional treatment and the patient suffers an adverse outcome, they face the threat of malpractice suits and professional sanctions. But if the same doctor prescribes an approved pharmaceutical, no matter how harmful or ineffective, it is legally defensible. Because these drugs are the standard of care, doctors protected by liability insurance and institutional guidelines. This has created a climate where risk avoidance overrides innovation and protocol compliance replaces independent thinking. Journals captured by big industry advertising. Scientific journals, increasingly reliant on drug company advertising and sponsorship, skew publication in favor of products with commercial potential. Research that challenges dominant drug narratives are buried, while favorable studies, regardless of quality, are widely promoted. Insurance systems today are structured to reimburse only AMA-approved treatments, which primarily include drugs, surgeries, and diagnostic tests. Nutritional therapy, detoxification, and lifestyle-based interventions are often denied coverage, even if they outperform drugs in safety and efficacy. Medical students are rarely taught about prevention, nutrition, or holistic strategies. Their training is shaped by pharmaceutical models that equate symptom suppression with care. This tunnel vision is the predictable outcome of a system engineered to reward profitable treatments, not those that restore autonomy or health. This healthcare structure remains intact today, and the deeper you look at it, the clearer it becomes that the purpose of this system was never to eliminate disease, but to build a permanent, profitable industry around managing it. Rethinking cholesterol, heart disease, and cognitive decline. Modern medicine has framed cholesterol as a primary threat to health. From routine checkups to national guidelines, patients are taught to fear high numbers and suppress them with medication. Doctors reinforce their view through routine statin prescriptions, and entire treatment protocols revolve around reducing cholesterol to prevent heart disease. But this narrative was built more on commercial interests than biological truth. Cholesterol plays a structural and metabolic role in every cell. It stabilizes cell membranes, regulates permeability, and serves as a building block for steroid hormones, including estrogen, testosterone, and cortisol. Your body also uses cholesterol to synthesize vitamin D and produce bile acids necessary for digestion. Nowhere is it important more evident in the brain, which houses nearly a quarter of your body's total cholesterol, despite accounting for just a few percent of its mass. Neurons depend on cholesterol for synapses formation and communication. Without it, cognitive function collapses. Over time, the campaign to lower cholesterol has driven levels below what's needed for optimal function. Dr. Peter Glidden, a naturopathic doctor featured in the documentary, explained, "Low cholesterol levels are associated with an increased chance of death, an increased chance of cancer, high percentage of birth defects, peripheral neuropathy, shorter temper, and aggressive behavior, kidney failure, and dementia. Statins are a class of drugs that inhibit HMG-CoA reductase, an enzyme in the liver involved in cholesterol synthesis. By blocking this enzyme, statins lower total and LDL cholesterol levels, which has led to their widespread use as a preventative measure for cardiovascular disease. Yet the evidence for this benefit is limited. For people without a prior history of heart disease, statins offer little to no reduction in mortality or heart attack risk. Even in higher risk populations, the absolute benefit is small and often eclipsed by the drug's side effects, which include muscle pain, fatigue, liver dysfunction, memory loss, mood disruption, and reduced hormone levels, among others. Cholesterol thresholds were redefined to expand drug markets. Guidelines for what constitutes high cholesterol have steadily shifted. Numbers once considered normal are now treated as risky, not because of new evidence, but due to committee decisions shaped by pharmaceutical advisors. Each downward revision expands the pool of statin candidates and the market. The redefinition of normal into pathological has been one of the most profitable moves in modern medicine. Alzheimer's disease, now one of the leading causes of death in older adults, was virtually unheard of before 1940. Since the 1980s, its incidence has soared in tandem with low-fat dietary guidelines and widespread statin use. Experts interviewed in the film described Alzheimer's as a man-made epidemic triggered by the chronic starvation of the brain's most essential lipid. Not an inevitable consequence of aging, these trends suggest the disturbing possibility that modern policies intended to protect the brain have helped dismantle it instead. For example, Jonathan V. Wright, MD, an expert in natural medicine, noted that regular blood donation significantly lowers the risk of heart attack and stroke, likely by reducing iron overload and oxidative stress. These outcomes surpass what statins offer, yet they're rarely promoted because they can't be patented or monetized. While cholesterol has been vilified, the real metabolic threat may lie elsewhere. The film notes a tight correlation between glyphosate exposure through GMO corn and soy and rising LDL levels. Cholesterol levels rise not because of saturated fat or eggs, but as biological response to environmental toxins. Meanwhile, heart attack trends don't track with cholesterol levels at all, calling into question the entire lipid hypothesis. The big secret? Health was always in your hands. The most striking message in The Big Secret isn't about hidden toxins or corrupt institutions. It's about power, specifically the biological power each person carries. Despite decades of dependency, censorship, and regulatory control, the most potent force in medicine remains your body's ability to repair, regulate, and recover. The film makes clear that the system didn't just overlook this truth, it was designed to suppress it. Chronic disease is framed as inevitable, and treatment means lifelong medication. Nutrient-poor food is normalized, metabolic poisons like fluoride are defended, and biological dysfunction is treated as fate. But this framing serves institutions, not individuals. Real healing begins not with more control, but with fewer interferences and the return of what your body needs to thrive. Achieving optimal health doesn't begin with a pill. It starts with minerals, real food, movement, metabolic renewal, clean water, light, rest, and community. These fundamentals don't generate recurring revenue. They recalibrate biology at the source, reversing patterns that pharmaceuticals only manage. The film documents how clinicians who promote natural healing are often discredited, censored, or removed. Therapies that bypass pharmaceutical dependence are dismissed because they threaten the medical business model. Reclaiming your health means seeking out what the system tries hardest to hide. You are not broken by default. Health isn't a privilege tied to income. insurance, or expert access. It's something you build through choices once you understand how the system works and, more importantly, how to step outside of it. The greatest threat to the medical industry isn't a competitor. It's the informed individual, someone who no longer waits to be saved, no longer accepts decline as normal, and no longer forgets that biology was built for resilience. Mindful Moments is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program scheduled either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Jillian. Thank you for listening.
Hi, the Bay State Council of the Blind has available free braille copies of a new publication from the CDC. It's entitled COVID-19 Vaccination Guidance, and this one-volume publication focuses on information about the vaccines and vaccine safety. To get your free copy, send your name and mailing address to kim.charlson@perkins.org. That's kim.charlson@perkins.org.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is Bird Note. The Juan Fernandez Islands off the coast of Chile are home to many unique birds. Perhaps the most vibrant is a critically endangered hummingbird called the Juan Fernandez Firecrown. The firecrown's lustrous feathers almost glow in the sunlight. The male's bodies are a fiery orange, and their crowns gleam in shades of cinnamon to golden yellow. Females wear cooler tones, with green backs, white bellies, and their own gorgeous crowns of shimmering blues and purples. Measuring more than 4 inches long from beak to tail, the Juan Fernandez firecrown is hefty for a hummingbird. To conserve energy while feeding, the birds often hang upside down on flowers, rather than hovering in place. But when courting an eligible female, the males still give it their all with an impressive flight display. Unfortunately, habitat loss and the spread of invasive species in the Juan Fernandez Islands threaten to extinguish the firecrown's brilliance. These hummingbirds are only found on Robinson Crusoe Island, where no more than a few thousand remain. Today, conservationists with Oikonos ecosystem knowledge are working to restore the island's native forests and to ensure a bright future for the Juan Fernandez firecrown. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
This is a public service announcement from the Massachusetts Association for the Blind. The Massachusetts Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired provides assistive technology training for persons with visual impairments. If you or a family member are interested in receiving one-on-one specialized training, please contact 617-991-7073 or email atcenter@mabcommunity.org.
People with disabilities adapt on a daily basis. They're people you want on your team. And we're here to help you find blind and visually impaired professionals to help you reach your organizational goals. Building an inclusive workforce where individuals with disabilities are welcome is possible thanks to Mass Commission for the Blind. Partner with them to hire individuals who are blind or visually impaired and reach your workforce goals. The success of your organization depends on the diversity of your team. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB to learn how you can become an employer partner for the blindness community. That's 1-800-392-6450 or mass.gov/MCB.